From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of April 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. The folks from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will help us explore the cash grain market. We'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. They're on the 23rd floor of the Boeing building in Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, I'll update you on how ag firms have been faring against the S&P 500. The folks here in the College of ACES, Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, decided to put an ag index together. And guess what? The farm economy has done better than the S&P. Over the last 4 years, we'll have all the details on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. July contract and the soft red winter wheat at $8.10¾, up 30¾. That nearby May, up 30¾ as well, at $7.75. The hard red July at $9.22¾, 25 cents higher. May corn futures up 9¾ at $7.51¾. July at $7.59½, a dime higher. September at $7.12, up 10½. And December corn, $6.68¼. The new crop finished 12¼ higher. The March contract at $7.67½, up 12 cents as well. May soybean futures, $13.44¼, up 12½. July, $13.55¾, 12½ higher. August soybeans at $13.56¾, up 12¼. And November beans, $13.49¼, 9½ higher. May bean meal at $3.47.80, up 2.60. May soybean oil today at $57.39, up 55. Livestock finished the nearby cattle futures at $118.17½, up 77½ cents. June at $115.80, up 50. May feeders at $133.22½ were down 7½ cents. And the May lean hogs today at $102.60 per 100 pounds finished up 17½ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. David Dickey and I would like to take this chance to thank you for pledging your financial support during our most recent spring fund drive. It was very successful. We'll give you more details later in the week. Again, thanks for pledging your support. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $107.18 a barrel, down $2.48. Ethanol at 263 1/10, a penny and 3/10 higher. Natural gas at 413 2/10, down 7 2/10, 2/10 of a cent, that is. And the heating oil May contract there at $3.18½, down 3 9/10 of a cent. Gold futures at $1,492.30 an ounce, up $7. The Dow down about 154 points at 12,187. And the dollar at 75.5 is up 0.66. The CRB index at 359.42, down 3.36 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, they say the sky should be mostly cloudy. A high near 59 degrees, northeast winds at about 13 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way up to 20. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms likely, cloudy, a low of 44. East-northeast winds at 13 to 15, gusting to 22. The chance of precip this evening at 70%. Tuesday, showers and thunderstorms remain likely, cloudy, a high near 69. East winds at 13 to 15, they'll gust to 23. Chance of precip tomorrow at 70%. Tomorrow night, showers and thunderstorms will continue. Some of those storms could turn severe. Lows around 49 degrees. Southwest winds at 13 to 18, gusting to 24. It's going to rain here tomorrow night, 100% chance. And on Wednesday, partly sunny, a high near 55 degrees. Breezy, a west-northwest winds between 18 to 20, gust as high as 26. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 34. Thursday, partly sunny, a high 52. Thursday night, showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 43. And Friday, showers and thunderstorms again. Cloudy, a high near 64. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural commodity markets is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Outside markets decided that they wanted to play, and the folks at the S&P, I suppose, just decided they hadn't made enough money or something. I don't know. They came out and said, we're not sure how stable this economy is at this point, and we're just going to say it out loud. So what happened?
Well, I'd be kind of worried about getting it audited from the government now that you downgraded the U.S.
Yeah,
the IRS is going to be knocking on their door.
Yeah, you know, the S&P folks, let's see, a little bit later in this program, and sometimes you'd better be rather be lucky than good sometimes, but the folks here at the Ag Econ Department are pretty good, and they just finished up a study on S&P 500 as it compares to what they put together as an ag index. Of course, it didn't do nearly as well as the ag index over time, so let it give you some kind of background. You can download and look at that if you want off the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Nonetheless, it had an impact in the market today, not that particular article, but the S&P making some statements about the economy.
Yeah, just a little concern. There's a disaster just about everywhere, you know, once a week, and unfortunately, that was the top news item. The panic, a lot of the traders, the market action really suggested the trade did not know what to do with that type of news, because a lot of the money movement and the different commodities really don't add up here at the end of the day. But the number one theme was there was concern about market stability. And to top that off, Saudi Arabia came in and talked about more cuts in their production due to the concern that the overall world economy could be slowing here, and they didn't want to lose overall demand for their oil products. So it was a combination of those two things that sent the commodity traders on a wild vengeance today here, trying to allocate their money to different sectors.
Yeah, and they center down for a while in the futures markets for corn, soybeans, and those sorts of things, and then turned around and wheat rallied right out of the bottom end of it.
Yeah, cycle counts or the cyclical pointed to some type of low Sunday night, Monday, and that held true. And if you do analytical studies, there's a correlation between when Zwicker goes on vacation and disasters in the market. And I thought that was going to hold true once again. But we had some pretty good reversals up out of the hole here. I think with world uncertainty taking place, that food might become a safe haven from time to time. And I think that was some of the main feature, along with weather concerns in the wheat market. Mike Zuzulo did a great job on Commodity Week. He hinted around about the wheat market, and sure enough, the wheat market caught on fire today. The global traders concerned about weather here in the U.S., weather in China, weather in Europe. So we saw the market technically reach a support level and reverse off those support levels as they wanted to get some more coverage.
Yeah, when we finished up Friday, there was only 2.25 cents, I think, difference between the lead option May wheat futures and lead option corn futures. But that spread widened out pretty good today. It's more than 20 cents now.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of activity in the wheat market here. There could be some more fireworks in the evening trade here. We'll see what the crop conditions report shows here this afternoon. But the Western Wheat Belt is in pretty good trouble. The rains out west were more confined, a little bit more towards the north in northern Kansas and into Nebraska, but there's good portions of Oklahoma, Texas still struggling there.
So the rally in the wheat market, is that a hard red, soft red U.S. wheat problem, or is that a global problem?
It became a global problem. Or is becoming a global problem.
Mm-hmm.
Europe was somewhat of the leader here. Wheat futures in Europe started trading in our wee early hours here, and they firmed, and it sort of spilled over into the U.S. Mainly right now, the way we view it is here domestic-wise, more of a hard red winter wheat situation. it could roll it over into a spring wheat situation here if we don't warm up, dry out for the northern part and through Canada. And lastly, it would probably be a soft red winter wheat issue.
Speaking of drying out, what do you think this afternoon's reports will, crop progress reports, that is, will show in terms of corn planting progress over the last week?
We're going to see last week's planting plate pace double, if not triple, up to this 8-10% complete as a nation. We're getting the drier areas in the ground first. It's going to be probably slow going here in the next week or two as the rest of the ground tries to get caught up here. But typically we're 15-19%. Optimum planting date is this second week into May here. So as we move along in here, if the forecast continues to be wet and this crop goes in later and later, the trade is going to be a little bit more concerned each and every day because of the tight old crop situation.
Any concern you have for the corn and soybean producer in the Midwest and movements they ought to be making at this time for marketing their crop?
Well, as far as marketing goes, one should be dialed into some type of plan already. If you're in a scale-up sowing program, this is following through the upside here, giving you opportunity to continue to reward the market. As we go here, it's a dynamic market, and it's going to continue to be a dynamic market until we get through the majority of the growing season here as we get past midsummer.
Hey, thanks so much, and you have a great afternoon.
Very good. Take care.
Mm-hmm. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon. You can hear what Kurt has to say again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post everything from our pre-opening market report to our closing market report each and every business day, not long after their air on our radio stations. It's all at willag.org in its entirety, and it's free. Thank you so much, by the way, for those who decided to come in and be a friend of Illinois Public Media and make that effort in the last week to pledge your financial support. We'll have more details on that in the coming days. In today's agricultural news, USDA's Tom Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture, spent a lot of time lately defending the federal government's investment in the ethanol industry, most recently at a hearing of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. On Friday afternoon, Vilsack was in front of a much friendlier audience when he attended the grand opening of an algae biofuels facility located next to the Green Plains Energy Ethanol Plant, that in Shenandoah, Iowa. In his remarks to those attending, Vilsack said it was imperative that biofuels continue to grow.
And I appreciate the fact that there are some who have some concerns about that, but for me, reaching the 36 billion gallon threshold that Congress has set is an absolute imperative for this country. It's an imperative because it is a linchpin to revitalizing the rural economy.
Vilsack has been getting a lot of questions from members of Congress and others as to whether America's farmers can produce enough grain to meet the world's needs.
I believe that our farmers are the most productive in the world. They're going to continue to be the most productive in the world. They should not be shortchanged. They can meet the food, the feed, the fiber, and the fuel needs of this country. And they can also commit themselves to a robust export market, as we're seeing.
That was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. In other Washington news, the FY 2012 Republican House budget resolution proposes over $177 billion in cuts to agricultural programs over the next 10 years. That bill suggests a $127 billion cut to food stamps, an approximate $30 billion cut to commodity programs, and about $20 billion to be cut from other programs, including conservation. It means that even if the resolution is rejected by the Senate, the House Agriculture Committee could be forced to cut $177.86 billion from agriculture programs if the committee wants to pass legislation, such things as, for instance, a new farm bill. We'll move from Washington to the export market, where the Japanese feed mills appear to be returning to full production. The U.S. Grains Council in Tokyo is reporting that since the earthquake and subsequent tsunami struck Japan March the 11th, surrounding Japanese feed millers have stepped up to fulfill the demand in the affected area. Even so, the U.S. Grains Council Associate Director in Japan says livestock farmers in the area could get roughly maybe half of their normal demand for feed during the month since that earthquake, and as a result, producers are reducing feed rations. He also says that we've not yet seen the devastating reports in regards to animal losses at large cattle, swine, and chicken production facilities. A livestock expert informed the council that animals will survive but will experience some growth reductions. The livestock population in the whole country was not significantly impacted, though. Japan's ports are recovering at this time, but it's not clear when a Panamax-sized vessel will be accepted into the affected areas. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. You know the farm economy has outperformed the general economy over the last several years. The Ag Economist at Illinois wanted to gauge by just how much, so they put together an Ag Index to compare to the S&P 500. I'll have more in a moment. The Ag Index is a grad student project at Illinois. Clay Kramer and his farm management specialist, Professor Gary Schnittke, put the index together to see how it compared to the S&P 500 through the rough and tumble times of the economical crush of 2008. Well, the two calculated the index using 21 publicly traded agricultural firms beginning in 2007 and through the first quarter of 2011. Their work showed a market value gain across the Ag Index of 8.6%. Over that same period, the S&P 500 declined 2.7%, although Schnittke says there were times when the Ag Index lagged the S&P.
The year, too, was the year of, obviously, the big stock price decline. S&P 500 declined 35% from beginning of 2008 to end of 2008. And the Ag Index fell further, 48%.
Schnittke and grad student Kramer evaluated the markets using a geometric mean, which he says is very similar to an average.
Geometric mean, it's very similar to the average, but what it means is that if you placed funds in the beginning, at the beginning, this would be your average yearly rate of return. So 8.6 would mean that if you 8.6% for 2007 through 2010 means you would have placed funds in there at the beginning of 2007 and had an average 8.6% increase in value each year up to 2010.
Among the five agricultural sectors represented by the Ag Index, there were some winners and losers, too. The first processors didn't perform nearly as well when compared with the fertilizer and equipment companies, says Clay Kramer, but that is beginning to change. Schnittke says companies like ADM, Cargill, and Bunge are coming on strong right now.
First processors have really come on the last couple quarters and have done extremely well in the last quarter of 2010 and the first quarter of 2011. But if you do look at it, you know, 2008, the companies in our index that had the largest market gains were the ones that supplied the firms, and the ones that bought from the companies had the lower amounts of gain. And fertilizer outperformed, or in terms of just market value increases, outperformed everybody, and that was in part due to fertilizer prices increasing and we having short supplies, and merger and acquisition in the fertilizer industry also contributed to that.
While the Ag Index is a grad student project at Illinois, Clay Kramer, with the urging of Gary Schnittke, says it will be updated over time. Those wanting to read more about the Ag Index can do so online at the FarmDoc Daily website. The address is farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons are with us from right here in Champaign County. Lisa Jones is on the phone line. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Todd.
It's a nice day. Well, cool, but it was sunshiny. There's a little cloud out there now. Producers giving you much in the way of a jingle on the phone today?
Pretty light in here today. I actually was out part of the day this afternoon, and, you know, 77-degree weather is something we can all enjoy. We have some producers that are further to our south and east and only got about 0.2 of rain over the weekend that are in the field today, I think, just trying to get some field work and some bushels in before we get this rain here that's predicted for tomorrow and then basically the next 10 days.
Indeed. What's the chatter about the move upward today in the marketplace? Can it continue?
I think so. I mean, I think what we saw today was mainly driven by wheat. I mean, we continue to hear about dryness in our own wheat belt as well as coming from Western Europe, and I think that kind of led the charge today. And, you know, as we continue to have these wet weather forecasts and just delay this planting across the entire corn belt, I think we'll see some higher numbers.
In 10 days, that'll put us towards the latter end of April. That's when producers will really start getting nervous about the corn crop. No need to do that yet, I suppose, though.
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've seen some pretty good crops go in the last couple of weeks in April, the first couple of weeks in May. So, I mean, I think at this point, guys are antsy just due to the fact that they were able to get some field work done there during our little Indian summer 80-degree days we had for about 3 days in a row. But I think we've still got some time on our sides here yet, and we'll just hope that we can get a couple days in at a time here between these showers, because I think we could sure use the moisture.
Yeah, the soybean didn't rally nearly as much as the corn or the wheat today, although they came up 12 cents.
Mm-hmm.
How about that one? What's the chatter there?
I think it just still has to do with this record crop that we see coming out of South America. They're about 85% harvested now, which is ahead of schedule. And, you know, when you add that many bushels to the marketplace, I think that has effect. The second news we had coming out this morning was the increase of the bank reserve requirements coming out of China. And, you know, is their demand going to decrease with that news? And I don't think that that's something that we're too concerned about. But when you have increased supply and a potentially decreased demand, I think we were impressed that beans did as well as they did here on the close.
And speaking of demand, come back to the corn market. Have you seen that lessen up in any of the areas you deal with, whether that be exports, ethanol, or the livestock sector?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think we're going to come to a point at the end of the summer where it doesn't really matter what you're going to pay for corn. I just don't think there'll be any around. I mean, we posted an August basis here in Champaign of 20 over the September. And, I mean, that just seems to be a pretty light number here going into August. So I think, well, I mean, we've seen a lot of bushels move here January, February, March when the weather was nice and prices were high. And I just don't think we have the kind of uncommitted grain like we've seen in the past.
And what are your bids on the day?
We are cash corn, $7.44, fall corn, $6.36, cash beans, $13.29, and fall of 11 beans, $13.14.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
You have a great day. That's Lisa Jones. She is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll take a detailed look at the agricultural forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Glazed Ham Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, Oliver Evans died, an American millwright. Evans invented the first automatic corn mill, and he pioneered the high-pressure steam engine. Evans' corn mill used bucket elevators to raise the grain and a hopper to cool and dry the meal. In 1854, New York became the first state to fund a study of insects harmful to plants. In 1874, George Harrison Schull was born, an American botanist. He is frequently called the father of hybrid corn. As a result of his research, corn yields per acre increased between 25 and 50%. He developed a method of corn breeding that made possible the production of seed capable of thriving under various soil and climatic conditions. In 1878, Harley Proctor created Ivory Soap, and in 1955, the first franchised McDonald's was opened in Des Plaines, Illinois, by Ray Kroc, who purchased the hamburger restaurant owned by the McDonald brothers. On opening day, a two-patty hamburger was 15 cents, and French fries sold for a dime. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Josh Dar of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is here to talk about the weather forecast across the nation and the globe. Let's start with wheat, Josh. And we can start, I suppose, right here in this part of the world and work your way out to the west.
Sure. Sounds good. Midwest soft red belt. Rainfall over the weekend, generally in the event Friday, and then again on Sunday across the soft red acreage is in the half inch up to an inch and a half range. That seems like maybe a lot, but for what's coming down the pike, that's just the start of what will be an exceptionally wet pattern for the second half of April, and we think may even extend into the early portion of May. The ingredients are coming together for about as wet of a pattern as you can get for this time of year. We have a good ridge. Warm ridge down south across Texas and the southern plains. We have colder than normal temperatures across the northern U.S. into Canada. Ample supply of both warm in the south, cold in the north, and in between is the jet stream. And so we have many systems coming across the central U.S. through the Midwest the next 2 weeks. The next one starts tomorrow morning, actually, across the Midwest, and will last for 36 to 48 hours, produce majority coverage of half an inch up to 2 inches, then the next wave comes through starting Thursday night into Friday, and then it's another basically system every 2 to 3 days for the next 2 weeks. Total rainfall amounts generally in the 2.5 to 5 inch range across the soft red belt of the Midwest, and obviously not only for wheat is that too much moisture potentially, but it's hugely problematic for corn and soybean planting across the region.
Yeah, so are we talking, we said soft red, but the winter wheat belts, are we talking from Minnesota to northern parts of Kentucky and Tennessee? Or?
It's actually, the wettest zone will be I-80 down the Ohio River.
Okay.
So that swath of acreage all the way from, well, essentially from Nebraska, northern Kansas eastward, will be the wet zone. Now, let's talk about Kansas and the hard red crop across that acreage. The event this past weekend, we saw on Friday, was very telling. Northern counties in Kansas, eastern counties in Kansas picked up better amounts. Southern counties in Kansas, southwestern Kansas missed out. We think that continues to be the trend the next 2 weeks. There are certainly multiple opportunities, but it's northern Kansas and eastern Kansas that looks to pick up the better amounts. So that south acreage in Kansas, and certainly then more so into Oklahoma and Texas, it's going to be tough to not stay in a declining yield mode, given that we've had a dry spring in those areas.
Right, so we won't be able to shut it off here, and they won't be able to turn it on there. Is that...
Yeah, it's either feast or famine, so to speak. Yeah.
And then about the rest of the world, what do you see?
Wheat-wise, still a pretty interesting story in several sectors. Western Europe, central northern France and the western Germany has had a very dry spring, much like the southern plains. They looked at very little, if any, precip the next 2 weeks. So they've had a very dry, warm spring there, too. So issues in that part of the globe. China has had a very dry spring across the winter wheat acreage, although we see some improvement. It's not going to be flipping the switch to a wet pattern, but some improvement across the winter wheat acreage of China as we get into late April, early May.
Hey, thanks so much, Josh.
Thanks, Todd.
Josh Dar is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. You have a great day. You can hear us again if you'd like on our website. The address is WILLAG.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.